You are listening to Talent Pod from Talent FM. Your host is Nikki Dallas.
So good afternoon. Today I'm joined by Vicky O'Farrell from Motivational Voice. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, Nikki.
Thanks so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
So your moniker, your self-styled moniker, is the Queen of Behaviours. So I'd love to know a little bit more about how you became the Queen of Behaviours and tell me a little bit more about Motivational Voice.
Oh, my limited company vehicle is called Motivational Voice. And to be quite honest, that was because the V is for Vicky and the M is for Mark, my husband. And so I thought, well, I need to name the business when I set it up 2013.
Wow.
I got into personality profiling when I was doing my coaching qualification with the Coaching Academy. But it was only last year, to be frank with you, that I then rebranded to the Queen of Behaviours. And it came about just because, like, a few people had said, exactly what is it that you do with this personality stuff? Because I just used to constantly talk about DISC. And unless you're in this world, you've absolutely no idea what DISC is.
Yeah.
So I went through it with my business coach and on a mastermind program and actually bouncing ideas around. The Queen of Behaviours worked. So, yeah, I went for it. Took the name, stood up, stepped into being the queen.
Love it. I absolutely love that. So you mentioned personality there. I normally refer to it as psychometric. So are we talking about the same thing? Personality profiling, psychometric testing. We're talking about the same thing, aren't we?
And we are. I tend to use the word personality because as soon as you say the word psychometric, to the people that I speak to, not you, we could have a debate on this, kind of go, oh, psychometric testing. Oh, though that sounds all deep and meaningful. And yeah, the word test would indicate that there's a right or wrong. And there isn't when it comes to personalities, is there?
Absolutely. And that actually brings me nicely into the first thing I wanted to ask you is that I know that many people have a lot of preconceived ideas about psychometric assessments, and whether that be DISC or McQuaig or Myers-Briggs, I think most people have done one at some point in their career. So let's start by setting the record straight by discussing what psychometrics are and what they are not.
Okay. They are not something that is a right or wrong. It is about, like you say, the word assessment rather than test. It is not an excuse to come out with bad behaviour. It's not about labelling people. It's nothing like that. It's about understanding what that person, what motivates and drives that person to ensure that the role they're doing is using them to their skills and ability.
So it's not something that is transient. You know, once you've got a particular kind of behavioral style, is that something that sticks, or can people be trained into different styles? Or
No, because that's then a different thing about behaviors versus skills. Skills can be trained. Mm-hmm. Behaviors, I wouldn't say we are fixed as one person all the way, because I know if I look at my behavioural style from when I set my business up to now, so it's nearly 10 years, I have changed. Predominantly in DISC terms, my I is still high, but my D has also become higher because I've had to step into being far more of a decisive, direct, demanding person when you're running your own business. So in terms of personalities, our environment will impact who we are, yeah, who we're with, where we are.
Yeah.
I think what I'm trying to say is that, yeah, you can't teach someone their personality. You can teach them their skills. You can help them understand what their personality is. And in that way, you can help them to adapt their style depending on who it is that they're talking to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that people think if you're a certain type, then you are right for a certain role. So if you're one thing, then you can only do this role. I know that when we've spoken before, you've got a fantastic example, which I'd like you to share, if you wouldn't mind, about the prime ministers, because I think that really explains it. But just before you do that, do you want to just explain DISC, what it is, just in case anybody doesn't know what DISC is who's listening?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, there's lots of them out there, but I came across DISC and just fell in love with it for its simplicity. A gentleman called Dr. William Walter Marston in 1928 published his studies of normal people, and everyone thought it was a bit strange because you can't really sell lotions, potions and half an hour of therapy bed to anyone that's normal. But he did it, and he simplified his study, which is why I love the DISC system, because you can... The way I deliver it, the way I teach it, which is the way that most people do, is it's something that sticks with you. And I can't talk to you about Myers-Briggs, Belbin Clarity 4D or any of those other ones because I've not studied them. I'm aware of them, but I've not studied them. So I just deal with DISC.
Yeah, you mentioned a high I. So what does that mean in DISC terms? So do you want to spell it out, what DISC stands for?
So yeah, if I'm just having a coffee with someone, I would say, are you outgoing or are you reserved? Which would tell me they are either the D and the I or the S and the C. And whether they're people-focused or task-focused, which would tell me whether they're the D and the C or the S and the I. So the letters mean dominant, influence, steadiness, and compliance. And we are a blend of all of these. And depending on how far above or below the middle line of zero sits, tells me how you deal with problems and challenges, how you interact with people, the speed at which you work, or rules and regulations. And we can't be all of them. We're a blend, but one will always be more dominant than the other.
Okay. So I know that you can be different types and still be successful in a particular role. So let's hear that Prime Minister example, because I do love that one.
Oh, well, I use it just because, like you say, people go, surely all salespeople are eyes, or if you're an accountant, you've got to be C style. It's actually, no, we can all do the role. It's whether it is to our skill set as well as our behaviours and whether we find it exhausting or not. So the example I gave you was prime ministers. Let's look at four very different styled prime ministers here in the UK. D style, I would have Margaret Thatcher. As an I style, I would have Tony Blair. As the S style, I would have John Major. And as the C style, I would have Gordon Brown. And I'm sure you would agree, it's not about which party and your political persuasion. It's just about four very different characters. Yet they all, and irrelevant, again, of whether you agreed or disagree with their policies, they all did the role of prime minister.
Yeah. And I think that's such a powerful example to kind of illustrate to people, you know, to move away from this thinking that if you're a certain type, then you're only suitable for a certain job. So that's really helpful. Thanks for clearing that up. I know that you wrote an article last year for Facilitate magazine, and I know you're a keen supporter of how psychometric testing can support in hiring the right people. Tell me a little bit more about your thoughts around that.
Yeah, well, a lot of people, when they use this personality profiling or psychometric assessments in the roles, they generally wait until they've hired the people and then they do it, or they might get down to like a shortlisted candidate and then they do it just to understand. Or sometimes it's even a tick box exercise for people. They feel like, oh, we've got to just do that before we actually, you know, put the role out. But And this is why we connect so well, is because to me it's about, actually, no, before you even write the job spec, before you even write that application, or when you're actually going out there to look for the job, do the test, do the assessment on the role first, so that you can understand what behaviours people need to have in that role. That way, before you've even gone out to the worldwide to ask for people to apply, you know what you're looking for. You know the questions you can ask in the interview process. And you know whether the person that then applies for it, they could do the job, but are they going to be underutilized? Are they going to be used to their best ability? Are they going to find it exhausting to do that role? And are they going to end up leaving, which will just cost money and expense, not just the financial expense, but the mental well-being as well of people. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big believer in looking earlier rather than later when you're doing these tests.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think so many people are focusing, quite rightly so at the moment, on mental health and well-being programs and strategies in their organizations. And of course, employers have a responsibility to provide that support to employees. But just getting the right people into the right roles will help to mitigate some of this stress or some of this mental health impact at work. And so why do you think that more people don't make this part of hiring a standard?
Because I don't think they know you can do it. Okay. I honestly think they go, yeah, but if you're doing a psychometric assessment or a personality profile, then someone's got to fill it in. How can an inanimate object of a job spec fill in a profile?
Yeah. So what we do, so we, as you know, this is how we connected, is we use McQuaig for that. So McQuaig has something called a job survey. So the way that we use it in our executive search product is we basically ask all stakeholders involved in the hiring to fill it in. And then we collate that and create something called the job survey report. And then everyone that is assessed against those behavioral competencies as per the job survey report. So what that does is you get a really good cross-section as well. I'm sure within hiring, sometimes HR has got a different view than the CEO, or the line manager may have a different view as the account director, and it falls down quite regularly. So that's something that McQuaig definitely offer. And I know that it's very successful because we use it to great success. Do you think that in terms of once you've hired people, what value then in terms of psychometric assessments, when are they best used? Or when would you, if a client came to you and said, well, we're interested in finding out more about your product, when would you advise that they utilize these assessments?
Well, they can be utilised at any point. It doesn't have to be year end. It doesn't have to be quarter end. It's when you've got potential conflicts. You know, if communication isn't happening, I use that word conflict, but to be quite frank, you want to be doing these things before anything like conflict resolution. You know, if somebody's joined the business, you know, when was the last time the rest of the team had a profile done? And actually, you know, as part of DISC, and I'm sure as part of McQuaig that you use it, you can all do your individual and then you can bring yourself together as a team. And then you can start looking at, okay, ease communication this way. You need more detail. They need to be in charge. These people need to be out front. These people need quiet. You can look at it as a team rather than as just an individual when you're hiring. But then you need to look at how you use this as a team, because, like I say, ease communication. But more than anything, if we all work to our strengths, it'll increase productivity, which hits the bottom line. So I don't know why all organisations don't use it.
Absolutely. I should have said, actually, you know, looking at these kind of non-biased strategies, you know, they certainly help organisations support any diversity goals that they've got. And that's, you know, in hiring new people, but also in developing existing talent and existing staff. Organisations, you know, of course, should always strive to invest in their people and identify key talent for progression through their ranks, through organic growth and so on. But how can psychometrics specifically support a company's growth?
Again, it's by looking at what are the strengths of your people and making sure that you are using your people to their full strengths. There's no point in having somebody who is all about detail, all about getting into the analysis and getting into that real deep dive, if you're not going to put them in a role where that uses their skills. A bit like if you've got somebody in DISC terms who's the I star, who's interested in people, who's interactive, who's everything, you know, if you've got a message to share with the market, make sure that you've got all your eyes on your side and they'll do it for you. Because this is the other thing, is you use people to their strengths, they'll give you way more than you ever expected they would.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot more in terms of productivity and just happier, healthier employees, isn't it? And that's what everybody is aiming for, of course. I know that some critics of psychometric assessments feel that these kind of assessments can unfairly label people. And so they can end up having a negative effect rather than a positive. So, you know, someone who doesn't really understand, I suppose, the systems will be like, well, you're this. So therefore, you know, and if somebody sits in that box for forever. How can we overcome that?
I'll be really honest with you, Nikki, that comes down to the delivery of who is doing the psychometric assessments with you. You know, that one of the first things I do when I deliver a workshop is I talk about the fact that it's not about labelling people. It's not an excuse for bad behaviour. It's about recognising, understanding and respecting our differences. Because if somebody in the organisation is just going to turn around going, oh, yeah, well, it's just I'm a D, so that's the way it is, you probably find that they're in that 55% of people who are not engaged and are actually perhaps checked out the business and haven't had the courtesy to leave, if you don't mind that expression. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Totally understand. I think that's a really important point. I've spent time becoming an interpreter for McQuaig and Flow Profiler that I use in my business, because I think it's really important that you can actually create the context around the feedback. And I think some people, they get their report and everybody likes to read about themselves. Of course they do. But they get their report and they go away and they're like, you know, they take it as everything as kind of face value that's in there, the wording and so on. Well, I'm this and I'm that. But of course, it's all in context and it's all, you know, a lot more contextualized than a lot of people kind of give it credit for, really. So let's talk about leadership. I believe that self-aware leaders, most definitely better leaders, and I know that this is a view that you share. Why is that? Why does self-awareness breed better leadership?
Oh, that it's a deep question. To be a leader goes beyond just personalities. You know, it's really thinking about the whole person. But, you know, leaders that are self-aware are open to learning. Yeah, they're open to listening. They're opening to supporting. You know, if you know what makes you a great leader, and let's face it, the leader doesn't choose the leader. It's the followers that choose the leader. So if you're aware of your own style, you can also be aware of your own, you know, downsides as well as all the great things and inspiring things that you do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course it does. I know you've put together a program for senior leadership, haven't you? Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, I have. I've put together it's a 6-week mastermind, and it does that deep dive of unpacking, you know, not looking just at your personality, but looking at your subconscious core values, your limiting beliefs, your imposter syndrome and your habits. And it's going to be a program, or it is a program, that really might touch on some nerves for people. But I think once you become self-aware as a leader as to why these things are, that you can not just manage them, but you can then grow into a stronger leader, a more fulfilled leader, but also helping those that follow you to become leaders themselves. So that's what it is. It's actually called Lead Yourself to Lead Others.
And how would people join that if they wanted to join up?
Well, if they contact me, vic@queenofbehaviours.com, I will actually set up a discovery call, and so that we can set up a 15-minute Zoom call, just so that I can detail more about the program, because I'm only having 10 people at a time on the program, because it is a deep dive. Mm. It's not like 50 people come on and I'll just show you all about this. It's not about me. It's about the transformation in you coming out the other side as a strong leader. And just to add to that, there's a lot of people have said, why are you doing it now? And in all fairness, we've gone through COVID for the last year. You know, March the 23rd, changed for England, and you know, the whole world has changed, and being a remote leader is more exhausting than being a face-to-face leader. And I want to take those leaders, especially in the corporate world, and actually get them to invest. It's not investing the finances, obviously I do charge for it, but it's investing the time in themselves. Because when we do get back out, when we are face-to-face, you know, we need to be the best version that we can. Mm. And if we're a bit unpacked, we need to look at that.
Yeah, I think your point about remote leadership is a really powerful one. I mean, I think a lot of people are struggling, aren't they, with remote working from home, but having to lead teams remotely. And I think a lot of people, they'll come on the call and they'll put a face on and say, yeah, I'm fine. Whereas if you saw them in the office for 9 hours a day, you'd notice more about, you know, how they were getting along. I suppose psychometric assessments could be really helpful there as well, in that, you know, to understand the type of people that you're dealing with in terms of understanding the personalities and perhaps helping them to be more forthcoming in how they're feeling. Or would you recommend it that, you know, companies use it for that means?
Yeah, I mean, the system that I use for DISC, one of the graphs, so there's three graphs in it, and one of the graphs actually shows how you change, your personality changes under pressure. Mm. Now, not everybody does change under pressure, but we've been under immense pressure for this last year. So I've actually been able to say to people, hold on a minute, let's have a look at where you change, because do you realise your impact on others? We go along on autopilot, but when you actually I know what I'm like when I change under pressure. And to be quite frank, I have to keep that under wraps because I'm not the best person.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's the thing, isn't it? And this is what's so good about talking about all of these things is that, you know, none of us are perfect. We've all got foibles and, you know, traits and things that are, you know, good and bad. And I think being self-aware, you know, understanding yourself at a time like this, you know, as you say, been through the pandemic and so on, understanding yourself so that you can then lead people and you can be a better manager and you can get the best out of people, I think is absolutely essential. And I think more people are beginning to do that and beginning to unpack that. For some people, through necessity, through, you know, struggling with stress or mental health and thinking, you know, how can I do things better? But even if you're not in that camp, and, you know, I think there's still a lot of value to spending some time and energy on these things. And I think, would you agree, Vic, that there's a lot of people that kind of think it's all kind of fluffy and it's all kind of, you know, additional stuff that we don't really need? And is this the kind of thing that when people start to cut budgets that it kind of gets cut? Whereas I believe, and I'm sure you'll agree with me here, that this is the time that we should be investing in these programs and in these products and things. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'll never be everyone's cup of tea. There's always going to be people that go, oh, yeah, psychometric testing. Oh, it's a bit woo-woo, isn't it? Why do I understand that? And do you know what? I don't even bother trying to convince those people because they're not my market. You know, if you don't believe it in the first place, if you don't believe that investing time and money understanding what makes your people tick, then to be honest, you're not the kind of organization I want to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Your passion and enthusiasm for your subject shines through. Why do you love what you do? What is it about it that keeps you getting, you know, going every day?
Oh, do you know what? Probably because the first time I ever did it, and you know, in my corporate life, I've done lots of different psychometric tests, but it was the light bulb that went off for me that really made me go, God, my eye style, and sorry for those of you who don't understand this, but I was like, my eye style must have stood for irritating at some points. I really know how I, excuse my language, peed people off over the years. And so because it did that for me, I then also get that when I'm talking with my clients. You know, when I see light bulbs go off in the room, when people are talking, when there's a board together or something, and they all just look and go, oh my God, now I understand you. It's so powerful, so powerful. Yeah.
Really rewarding, I should imagine. I know that you also do speaking as well, Vic. So tell me a little bit more about what you do. You don't just do DISC psychometric assessments. You do other things as well. Tell me a little bit more.
Well, yeah, as a professional speaker, I'm open to being booked at conferences or webinars, anywhere like that. I don't do weddings. It's not my kind of stuff.
Not weddings and bar mitzvahs.
No. No, but my speaking is all around behaviours. It's what I live and breathe. So I can stand up and do talks on why we should understand behaviours or how they come about. I could talk about, like I say, all of those things, limiting beliefs, imposter syndrome, etc. So, yeah.
I'm just a massive believer that the companies that are taking the time to invest in their people, to look after their people, whether it's through well-being, mental health, you know, strategies, whether it's by, you know, embracing diversity and inclusion and belonging, I'm just a huge believer that they will be the employers of choice for the future. We've got a whole generation of people coming through that are very self-aware, that do want to excel in the workplace, and they will choose the employers and the companies that are taking the time to make this investment. What would you say to somebody? I know you said that they're not your client, but, you know, would you say anything to change their mind in terms of, you know, why they should do it? I know that you said that they should, but why, you know, what will they get out of it if they were to invest in programs like yours?
It comes down to the productivity. It's easing communication, increasing productivity, and reducing conflict, because your team, that your people are your biggest asset. You can't manage them like you can a building that's bricks and mortar, but you can motivate your people by understanding them and what makes them tick. And, you know, if you want to keep people, the cost to employ people, well, you know that, it's what you do.
Yeah.
The cost of turnover of staff is so huge, not to mention the impact of like the mental health, etc.
Yeah.
So if you want to be a successful business, invest in your people.
Yeah. So to summarize, psychometric assessments has got its place in talent acquisition, in talent retention, in talent engagement. I mean, it just covers the whole talent spectrum, doesn't it, really? Thank you so much for sharing your views with me today, Vic. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you, and I really appreciate your time. And I wish you all the very best, and carry on being the queen of behaviors.
Oh, thanks, Nikki. It's been wonderful to be on your show. Thank you for the invitation.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Talent Pod, brought to you by Talent FM. You can find out more about Talent FM's commitment to non-bias hiring at www.talentfm.co.uk.